The day will come when North Americans look back on the day of $3 a gallon gasoline and say, those were the good old days. Cheap gas is not coming back. Cheap natural gas is never coming back. The North American continent is virtually out of natural gas. I predicted last year's August 14th blackout 6 weeks ahead of time. I'll tell you, this summer, if the weather gets hot, we will have 3 blackouts of the same size as last year, at least, because there's no natural gas to power the generating stations. Most of you probably do not know, the Christian Science Monitor reported recently, as we said would be inevitable, I wrote this more than a year and a half ago, more than 90 new coal-fired electrical generating plants are on the drawing boards and have been approved. Coal. Remember greenhouse gas and global warming and all that stuff? I just returned from Berlin, and clearly the stories that broke about 4 months ago about Saudi Arabia most likely having passed its peak of production, in my opinion, are clearly true. Representatives from ExxonMobil, BP, were at this conference. They lied. Other representatives there, very well-respected scientists, were there. The world's largest energy investment banker, Matthew Simmons, whose clients include the World Bank, Kerr McGee, Halliburton, was there. He had said that Saudi Arabia had peaked. We got more confirmation of that in Berlin, which means that if Saudi Arabia has peaked, planet Earth has peaked. And we will look forward to nothing more, no matter how much money is thrown at the problem, at diminishing hydrocarbon energy supplies, even as the population and global demand keep increasing. I and many other experts, including my dear friend Richard Heinberg, who wrote a great book, The Party's Over, were there, Colin Campbell, others. We were clearly of the position that we don't know how the U.S. economy can be held together even until the election, and certainly next year is going to be an extremely difficult year for all of us. So in that motive, understand that what we are dealing with now is, for the equivalent of a hunter, a wounded tiger, who is extremely dangerous. The scramble for diminishing energy supplies is on, and the U.S. government made a choice that it would take energy supplies wherever it had to, however it had to, and it has failed miserably, obviously, in Iraq. Yes, Iraq is pumping 2 million barrels a day, but the plan was to have it pumping 4.5 million barrels a day by now, and you can't do that with a sniper behind every oil well. The law of unintended consequences is on the stage. This is a wounded beast that is extremely dangerous. I would submit to you here, and the reason why I say this, is that we have a choice in this movement to how we view what we're doing, and it is a shame that this hall is not packed. We will take whatever steps are necessary to see that the hall is packed in Washington, and we'll address that tomorrow at the strategy session. But the question is, are we historians or are we activists? Yeah. Historians and activists behave differently, with different sets of priorities. Time is short. Our window is short. We have at most perhaps until the November election, really, to force 9/11 into an action issue rather than one that will be being debated 40 years from now with what remains of the world's economy by a few iconoclastic guys smoking a joint in Southern Oregon over a website trying to figure out what happened. And we don't want to be there, okay? We want to change something. So we have to think clearly, and my suggestion and the position I have advocated from day one is there is no measure of success. I am a failure when it comes to 9/11, because the only measure of success that I will ever accept for any of my work, no matter how long I've worked, is real change on the political landscape. And we have no change yet. So I would encourage all of you in all of your waking hours and all of your thinking about what we do next, not to think about what's a good argument or what makes you feel better. I got 26 years on a political battlefield, and I've lived it politically. I got 35 members of Congress reading my newsletter. I was a spokesman for an ill-fated presidential campaign. I've been on the political playing field a lot, and I'll shut up with a piece of good news before I shut up and say that in a ham and eggs breakfast, the chicken's involved, but the pig is committed. We're all pigs now. And I would also offer you one warming thought from my dear and wonderful friend, the former and the next representative of the 4th District of Georgia, the Honorable Cynthia McKinney, to remind you that she has not forgotten you. Her primary is in the first week in August, and once she wins her primary, and she will, because Denise Majette, who stole her seat from her with Republican money and AIPAC money last year, has abandoned the seat. So when Cynthia wins her primary locally, you can bet that she will be back in the national campaign, and she will be screaming 9/11 as loudly as I am. Thank you for having me, Toronto.
And you were listening to Mike Rupert, editor and publisher of the political newsletter From the Wilderness. He was speaking at Phase 2 of the Citizens International Inquiry into the Unanswered Questions of 9/11 that was held last May in Toronto. For more info on the 911 Truth Movement, visit 911truth.org, where you'll find links to many individuals, groups, and websites, including Michael Rupert's, who you just heard. Or you can visit his website, FromTheWilderness.com. Listeners in the Finger Lakes will have an opportunity to learn more on the topic of peak oil tomorrow night, Monday, September 13th. Michael Doliner will speak at the Friends Meeting House in Perry City, a few miles from Trumansburg, on Route 227, just north of the intersection of Route 228. The talk is at 7 p.m. and is free and open to all. It's sponsored by Back to Democracy, a citizens group that meets bi-monthly in the Trumansburg area. That's Monday, September 13th, 7 p.m. at the Friends Meeting House on Route 227 in Perry City. For more information, contact Margo at area code 607-387-5080. 387-5080. This is Unwelcome Guests. You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, Ithaca Community Radio at 88.1, Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, KFAR Knoxville 90.9, or Free Radio Olympia 91.3.
We are born of nature, and in nature we will die. Oh, and if we don't make it, it's not because we didn't try. No, it's not because we didn't try. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over my. They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns. All we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. They have the power, that's what they say, but we will turn those tables, take their power away. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. We will not be dissuaded, and we will not turn around. We will face the barricades, and we will tear them down. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over my. You can call me a fool, that's all right with me. I will live to see this good round world breaking free. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over my. They say they will incorporate the world. Over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over my.
At phase one of the inquiry into 9/11, as you know, Barry Zwicker and a number of other Canadians informed the attendees about phase two of the inquiry here in Toronto to introduce us to phase three, which is scheduled for this September in New York City. Here's the chief organizer, Nick Levice.
Wow, I've been given a pretty impossible task to have to follow on Mike. Not to mention Helen. And in about 10 minutes, I'm supposed to sum up what we've had the last 6 days and send us into the future, which I think you've also done very well, Mike. So maybe at least I can take solace in being superfluous. What do we know? You'll excuse me for being a bit telegraphic in the following. We're living through the crisis of an unsustainable system, a death system. Let's look at it for one moment from the perspective of the ruling elites. What might they be seeing right now in 2004? I think they're seeing that the dollar is air, that the oil is running out, and there are too many people. That's how they see it. Too many brown people, in their view. The racism at the center of this system should never be forgotten. We can't deny the white supremacist roots of the empire. What do we know? The vanishingly few own the means of production and the means of making money. The rest of us in the world live as serfs in perpetual debt, if we're lucky, or as the desperate and damned in search of a wage, in search of food. The leading industries, the only growth industries, are those of destruction, guns, oil, and drugs. Is their God, G-O-D. When there is no other way to growth, you can force profit. You can make war, guns. You can make anxiety, and people pop pills, drugs. I don't think it's a coincidence that Rumsfeld is a drug company executive. You can make some drugs illegal and turn crops into as good as a printing press in dollars. And we know how that operates on both sides, that the war on drugs keeps this giant security apparatus employed at home, even as the CIA and its operators can earn and its clients can earn abroad, plus the money laundering effect. What do we know? In 2000, the party of God, of guns, oil, and drugs, seized power in the United States. They had to steal the election to do it. They are the old war criminals of the 1970s and the 1980s, the Bush mob. They are the Iran-Contra crew. They plundered the country back then and got away with it then, and they know that crime pays. They keep reaching for their next crime to cover up the last. They are the killers of Central America. They are the arms dealers of the Iran-Iraq war. They are the architects of the Afghan jihad. They are the part creators of what's now called Qaeda. And they've got away with it, and they came back. And they stole an election, and they were rewarded for that, too. They are the managers of terror, of rule by fear. They're allied with the neocons and their Hitlerian visions, the project for a new American century. This is one nasty team that was put in power in 2000, and it had a mission, as we have seen. We know that they set out to implement long-standing plans to invade Iraq, to invade Afghanistan, to create a new American homeland, a new police state, which had been in the works for decades. Where was the pretext? That was the only thing that was lacking. The plan for the Afghanistan war is on Bush's desk on September 9th, and the force deployments are already underway from Britain as well. They came in saying, we're waiting for a new Pearl Harbor. Rumsfeld, first thing he did is he gave the Senate Defense Committee a 1962 report on why Pearl Harbor happened. So they're waiting for a new Pearl Harbor, and they got it. What do we know? 2.5 years later, hundreds, thousands of researchers who are networked through the internet. I think we've reached consensus on a few points. I think we're clear on certain things. We don't agree on everything. We have our disputes about the best approach, but there are a few really dramatic points that we can make to the people of the United States and of the world that we're pretty much clear on. What we know is that the chain of command on September 11th did not react by their own stories. They sat and twiddled their thumbs in various ways. This is true of Rumsfeld, of Bush, of Myers. Bush reading the story about the pet goat in the school, as though they were letting it happen. We know now what Mike has detailed here, the mechanics of how what was called until now the air defense stand down was achieved. We know that there was this unprecedented failure that cannot be explained unless you follow the evidence that shows that it was arranged intentionally, this unprecedented failure of the air defense. We know that September 11th was followed by these extremely suspicious anthrax attacks, which have been traced back to U.S. anthrax stockpiles. We know that anthrax was used to begin the dismantling of formal democracy in the United States. I'm afraid the real democracy may have never really been there. It's hard to say. Before my time, anyway. I was born after the election of Lyndon B. Johnson by the bullets on Dealey Plaza. So they began the formal dismantling of democracy in the United States with anthrax, the panic that it caused, ramming through the Patriot Act, the shadow government, Homeland Security. We know that a cover-up was on. We know that they stonewalled. We know that they pressured the Congress not to investigate September 11th. We know that the investigators have outrageous conflicts of interest. We know that Bob Graham and Porter Goss, who investigated on behalf of the Congress, were meeting with the ISI chief who financed the alleged hijackers, and they didn't bother to put that in their report. They didn't bother to explain that. We know that Philip Zelikow, who runs the Keene Commission, the executive director, is co-author with Condoleezza Rice, worked with her in both Bush White Houses, so that the judge is friends, best friends, with the star witness in this supposed case, farce. We know the history. We know the history of Qaeda as a CIA creation. We know all the precedents and parallels for false flag terror. We know about all the lies told to get casus belli for wars through the centuries and by the United States in particular. We know about the parallel attacks that are happening elsewhere that reek of false flag terror all around the world, so ably demonstrated by researchers in these past days. We know that these hijacker stories are absurd. We know that on the one hand, we have this one official story about these 19 nihilists, a hermetically sealed cell, leave no paper trail, says Robert Mueller, 10 months after the attacks, not a scrap of paper found connecting the alleged hijackers to 9/11. That's how good they were. And yet at the same time, there are 38 warnings coming down from all these foreign countries. Everyone's talking about how pretty soon planes are going to be hijacked in the U.S. and crash into buildings, and it might be sometime in September. And it's coming from all these different countries. Where did these warnings come from? And at the same time, you've got this perfect cell that let nothing on. How does that square? We know about World Trade Center 7 and what that in turn implies. This impossible collapse was not hit by an airplane. I wish most Americans were aware of this. We know that they performed after September 11th, full-spectrum 9/11 exploitation. We know that the conspiracy theorists are among the neocons and at the White House when they sit there and say Iraq backed the attack and 9/11 is a reason to invade Iraq. That's conspiracy theory. Completely unsubstantiated, pulled out of a hat. We know all these things. What do we have in our hands? What power do we hold? We know all these things, and we can communicate all these things. We have the key to unlocking. We have the key to unraveling the whole ball of lies that sustains this system. We hold it in our hands in this room and around the world, all the other 9/11 researchers. It's not the only key, I'm sure, but it's a strong one. It's a powerful weapon that we have in our hands. We've got the goods. They've used this as the sword to justify everything domestically, globally. The wars, the repression, rule by fear, they've used September 11th. And we've got September 11th in our hands, too. We can take that sword out of their hands. We can use September 11th. We can expose them with September 11th. We have this power. What do we do? Well, let's keep doing what we're already doing. Tell everyone what you know. It's simple. It's easy to talk about this. People are ready to listen. These are not such impossibly complex issues. It seemed difficult 2 years ago, but now it's really gotten simpler and simpler, and we know so much more. It's such a nice consolidated case. So I want you to tell everyone, find everyone you trust, tell them about this. Don't be afraid to speak out every opportunity you have. Take the videos from here, take what's on the web, take these books and give them to your friends, give them to your family. Put the videos on in your communities, in your churches, in your basements, wherever. Hold showings. Show Michael Rupert's video. Show Barry Zwicker's. Show Shadow Government Television. You can do this. You don't have to even sit there and talk. You can take Ian Woods' PowerPoint and do that. There will be more PowerPoints coming. There's so many resources on the web. You can do this. It's easy. It's easy to attract crowds or of whatever size and talk about these issues to expose how the world is really being run. And talk about all these warnings that we're hearing. How can they sit there and say that? 90% ready. Does everyone know this? Mueller and Ashcroft said the other day, the next attack is 90% ready. How can they know this? 90%, how do they measure this? 90%. And it's coming, and it's coming before the election. It's probably coming a lot sooner than that, because the real crisis is here now. Iraq, the dollar, the oil, this month, June. How are they going to handle that? So tell people, and if it happens, God help us, if it happens, don't shut up. That is the time when we have to be the loudest. That is the time when we have to keep saying, first of all, 9/11. I think we can turn this around. I think this can be the summer that begins something like the American Revolution. You know, there was once a summer of love. And that went as far as it did. And I think it made a difference, but in the end, it didn't turn the world on its head. But I think this summer could turn the world on its head if it's the summer of truth. I see New York City. We don't know yet what exactly is going to happen. You know, we're all ad hoc. What I love about this is not some massive organization. This could never be your traditional political, hierarchical, top-down organization. We are obviously the contrarians. We're coming from every possible direction. We've got so much energy, so much creativity, and we disagree with each other all the time. This is too individual. This has too many heads, this Hydra. There is no head to cut off. There is no leader. It's coming from the heart. That is powerful. What I see, but it's also ad hoc, eh? As a result, what I see in New York City is something. I'm going to quote a family member of September 11th, Beverly Eckert, who is on the family steering committee. That's the families who called for this independent investigation and who are now condemning this independent investigation. What a surprise. And I met her, and this is what she said. When we first envisioned this commission, we did not envision it made up of ex-senators. She's talking about the Cain Commission now, the supposed 9/11, the almost Kissinger Commission, the supposed 9/11 investigation. When we first envisioned this commission, we did not envision it made up of ex-senators and ex-Navy secretaries and all of this other stuff. We thought it should be professors and writers, scholars, and also people who are involved in the news, but not necessarily a part of it. These people, the commissioners, are all a part of it. In many ways, the government is part of the problem. Now, I want to see that commission that Beverly Eckert first envisioned. We're not going to get it in a really formal sense. We're not going to have the perfect evidentiary gathering just yet. That's coming. We have to win in the court of public opinion first, and then all the institutions that do exist can get to work, because there are universities, there are researchers, there are prosecutors who will take this up. So what we have to do first is win in the court of public opinion. But we can play at it. We can play at it a lot better than the Cain Commission has played at it. We can set up our panel in New York, and that is what I envision. I envision a panel in New York City in September, maybe around the 11th. The day the lie died. I certainly hope it will be this year. I envision a panel, say 7 panelists, and a couple of them are family members, firefighters, survivors, people who have serious respiratory problems because the government lied to them about ground zero toxicity, an engineer, an international minister, somebody, you know, an international element too, real professors, experts, scholars, outsiders to the government, outsiders to September 11th, hearing testimony in New York. And I'd love to see that on television. And you know what? If the famous television, if the big NBC doesn't want to do it, we've got our own TV now. I want to salute especially the people at the back who've been doing this live the whole time. Did you know we're live on the web? And if we're live on the web, that means we could just as easily be live on television. We are there. This is the power that we have through the confluence of many factors. It's a special thing to be living in the 21st century, that's for sure. But most of all, because we're getting to be can-do people. And they always say the revolution will not be televised, but I'm starting to think that if we do this right, the revolution will be television, okay? Our television that we're going to put on, not just this September, but that we're already putting on right now and that we're going to keep putting on, because we're off the web and we're here in the real world, and next we are going to be broadcasting to everybody by every means necessary. We can replace NBC. We can get this message out, and I certainly hope. I don't know why I'm getting this corny idea right now, but I've got to do it. I want to ask you all to just hold hands right now. All right? Everyone, oh, okay. All right, there's no words I can say. I just want you to hold them high and say, we can win this in 2004, not later, not in 30 years. Now, we're going to get the truth. We're going to get the truth this year.
For more information on the 9/11 Truth Movement, visit 911 truth.org.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Like ticking time bombs, set to go off without warning.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Arming to threaten the peace of the world.
You are with us, the terrorists. And that's what you got to know.
Like ticking time bombs, set to go off without warning.
Some action going on. There was a guy running from the cops. They tackled him, shoved him up against the car. I'm sure he's seriously injured. And then anybody who was around all of a sudden got shoved against cars on the ground, pushed with sticks. I was shoved against the wall. I'm trying to legally observe and make sure these clients are okay. They won't let me in the scene. It took about 7 cops to push me with their sticks out.
Crude, but effective.
Okay, I don't know Jack, but everybody out there thinks that staying here and fighting the Borg is suicide.
No. No, no one did
because
anything.
Because I was told they were throwing things.
No,
the police
weren't.
Told me. No. Police told me that you were throwing things.
Police are lying. I promise you, I was there.
Because we said it was our streets too, you know, and they didn't want to believe it, but it's true.
They're just afraid to come in here and say it.
The crew is accustomed to following my orders.
They're probably accustomed to your orders making sense.
None of them understand the Borg as I do.
Get very hurt on 28th Street.
He didn't do anything just because the cops hurt a young man of color.
And the cop just jumped him.
The cop had
his... What is that supposed to mean?
The stick out. Why he had the stick out? Nobody.
Was this over on that other corner? I'm not sure what it was. I saw a young man. He was a young man of color. I saw him be chased by two to three cops. Okay, they pushed him off the wall. That's what I saw. I saw him go down. I saw 5 to 6 to 10 officers somewhere around there, and then more joined them, throw him down and beat him. Then they started yelling, "Get off the wall! Get off the wall!" They started pushing all of us off, except for these two undercovers. Just on that ridge over there, except for these two undercovers that flashed their badges. We all get off and they started chasing us. Then we came down here and I saw a guy over there, the guy with curly hair, get taken away. So I yelled for his name. I saw this other man over here sit down, and I saw another man over there kind of looking like he was hurt. So I really think somebody should get over there. And somebody should check the young man over there, because there were like 5 to 10 cops on him.
You would be assimilated.
And he got pushed down. That's what I saw. And this was all just because we were walking in the streets and saying that they were our streets, too.
A high security force field. I shall attempt to override it.
Didn't mean to antagonize me.
I'm telling you.
Sorry, we're not throwing anything. It was a very peaceful moment.
A Borg proximity signal has been detected. Origin, Unimatrix 325, grid 006. Alter course to intercept.
Nothing destructive or anything that we were doing wrong. We are being harassed, okay? We're going down this street.
This force field will take some time to bypass. I do not detect any more species 8472 life signs.
We were walking down this way. Just because the cops heard young men of color and young men and young women, any protesters, just because they heard us doesn't mean we did something wrong. They do something wrong when they hurt us, when they beat us.
Combining the records Seven retrieved from the Borg ship with my own sensor scans, I would concur with Seven's appraisal.
This is one of the primary data processing chambers.
We are going to infiltrate the Borg cube.
We must be close to the Vinculum.
I say it again tonight. Thank God that George Bush is our president. And thank God... And thank God that Dick Cheney, a man with his experience and his knowledge and his strength and his background, is our vice president.
Our next guest holds a PhD in psychology and human sexuality. He is the author of 15 books, including the enormous bestseller, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I'm not sure what planet George W. Bush is from. He's going to speak to us tonight on the important subject of the truth, the need for truth to heal the 9/11 families and America. Will you please welcome from California, Dr. John Gray.
Thank you for being here, and it's a real honor for me to be here. This is very close to my heart. Before I get started, I'll be talking about 20 minutes. And so at 20 minutes, someone will come stand by my side to let me know it's time to end, because it's a short amount of time once your heart begins to open and you share what's real. And I went to, after 9/11, I'll just begin to share my story. After 9/11, I was so shocked, like all of us were. And then what I saw the government doing about it, and what the government was not doing about it, and what was not being said about it, I would call into the talk shows to talk. And it would be immediately dismissed, cut off. There was no forum for people to ask questions. I was anti-patriot. And I, being a talk show type person, I started my own radio show, actually, so I could talk about this every day. And I did it in the context of what people know me for as a counselor. So I was counseling couples and individuals on my radio show, and then every time the news would come on, I would then do a tirade for the next 30 minutes on the deficiencies of our government at this time. And I remember some of the highlights, which I'm going to share before I move into my main focus tonight. But I remember there was a moment where Iran said that we have custody of bin Laden and we will put him on trial. And the official White House response was, it's too late for that. The trial would be, you know, unfair. And I thought, this was probably the stupidest response anybody could ever give. We all know what happened with other celebrities who were on trial. They go on and on and on. All this attention would be put on bin Laden. He would be in custody. And a possible healing could have actually occurred in the world. Such that happened and is still happening in South Africa, where you put the victims on, give the victims a chance to tell their story to the people who perpetrated the crime. Now, on the other side of the world, they all feel they're the victims of us. That's why they're fighting us. Why not let them defend why they felt the need to attack America? Why not let the information come out that they were trained by America? Why not let the information come out that all their money comes through the Saudis from America? They don't want bin Laden to be on trial. They don't want information to take place. But even more than that, they don't want is for the American people to hear in a court what their grievances are with us. And that's the only way any resolution is ever will occur and can occur, is when both sides sit down at a table with the whole world watching, and they get to talk and talk and talk and talk. And what we have right now is an administration that does not talk, and I don't think can talk. Right now, we need to be talking. We have a government that keeps everything quiet, quiet, quiet. And of course, why do they keep things quiet? Because if they did talk, they'd be put in jail. And that's why we're here tonight. That's why we're here for this conference. It's so clear in my mind that we're not talking about incompetencies in the government, in the CIA, in the FBI. We're talking about murder. We're talking about people who, for the greater good in their minds, were willing to make the sacrifice. For the greater good, you make the sacrifice. That's what war is always about. That's what you're taught at the War College. For the greater good, killing people is okay. For the greater good, torturing people is okay. For the greater good, humiliating people is okay. Basically, anything is okay for the greater good. And this is our justification for all that's happened. Now, I'll share with you some of the secrets you learn as a marriage counselor, which I've done for 30 years. In a counseling situation, I tend to be privy to the secrets. Let's do the traditional type thing where the man is cheating on his wife and they're in counseling. Although many times, I'll have to say, and particularly in Texas, the woman is cheating on her husband. I'm very serious. That's the only case you'll find in Dallas. But I grew up in Texas, by the way. I moved to California. Bush was my neighbor. I moved out. I have funny stories to tell about that. But I'm going to come back to my, in the counseling room. Let's say the man tells me he's having an affair. The counseling goes on and on and on. I'm privy to that. I can't tell his partner. My style of counseling is such as I tell him, well, now that you've told me, I won't continue counseling you unless you stop having the affair. And I'll give you a few weeks for me to convince you. But I would not continue to be part of that abuse. Because when you're intimate with someone and you're lying to them, it's abusive. Just as the abuse from our government, which is lying to us, is abusive. So, it's very interesting. Here's a man thinking he's getting away with something. He's getting away with something, and he keeps trying to convince me his wife is nuts. Look at the way she's reacting to me. And what's interesting is she will react to his behaviors in the same way she would have reacted if she had known that he was cheating on her. If you get the point I'm saying, is she's going to be suddenly feeling to me in her intimate moments sharing with me in counseling, she'll say, I feel like I'm going crazy. I'm having such strong reactions. I can't trust anything he does. I get so upset with him. I have these fits of anger and despair, like he's cheating on me. Intuitively, she knows he's cheating on her. She reacts as if he's cheating on her, and she feels she's going crazy because her reactions are stronger than what he's actually doing in their relationship together. What she's reacting to is the lie. Well, what I see happening right now in the world is the whole world and America is reacting to these pictures of torture. What we're seeing is the same reaction Americans would have if and when the information of 9/11 truly comes out. America is saying there is deception, and this deception starts with the soldiers and goes all the way up to the top, and Americans are not letting go of it. The world is not letting go of it. They're holding on to this, and it will continue to bring out the deception in our government. And when you come down to the essence, our government, in the name of the greater good, which was gaining information of terror, was willing to do anything, inhumane, sadistic, horrible to these prisoners to get the information. Well, a group of people who could do that are also a group of people who could sacrifice 3,000 people in 9/11. And that is where we're going. And we need to keep that vision. The truth will prevail. And we're moving along that direction. So I became very discouraged after a year and a half of my radio show with Clear Channel. Didn't realize that Clear Channel was suppressing me. I thought it was just because I would be big competition to Dr. Laura's show. But then I finally realized they hated my politics. I was the only, quote, left-wing speaker on the radio. I'm so excited about Air America now. Anyway, I speak of politics not as an expert in politics, but as an expert in marriage counseling, as an expert in creating peace, as an expert of overcoming the gulf between men and women, which is simply the same problem that exists today, which is overcoming the gulf between East and West, overcoming the gulf of two completely different cultures. And I know how that's done. And it can only be done with truth. And what we have in the White House is only lies. And the situation will continue till it's a boiling point. But truth will prevail. And we're all a part of that history. Today, yesterday, the ongoing persistence in talking about this to others. And I know it's sometimes very embarrassing. Wherever I go, I talk about 9/11 to people. I just start giving them a little piece and a little piece and a little piece. If I told them the whole thing, they go, and they believed it, like everything we've talked about this weekend, and you tell them the whole thing, there's a reaction which is too much. There's nothing I can do about it. And that's not the reaction we want. The truth is, it's not too much. We are doing exactly what needs to be done about it. It's simply letting the truth be known. Now, the topic I'm talking about today is healing the heart of America. Because as an expert in trauma, 9/11 was a huge trauma to the whole country, to the world. And the people closest to that trauma are the family members of the victims of 9/11. And as those people's hearts are healed, then the heart of the world will be healed. And I will tell you, the optimistic viewpoint here, having experienced tremendous loss on a small level in my own life, and having healed that loss, my heart became bigger, my heart became stronger, and I became a better person. And I know how to heal a trauma. It is the truth. And as long as we keep speaking the truth and coming from a place of responsibility with it, by responsibility, I mean don't become like the person you're attacking. You have to hold your higher ground and speak the truth and speak the truth and speak the truth. And healing does occur. I'm going to share with you one of the healings in my life because I know how peace is created and I know how healing occurs, when no matter how horrible the crime. When I was a kid growing up, my dad was in military intelligence in World War II, and he continued to be in those circles. He was also a Texas oil man. My grandfather's one of the biggest Texas oil men in Houston. My dad was the vice president of the company, kind of in one foot in, one foot out. The Bushes lived down the street. Our school's football team beat his school's football team. You say that as a Texan. And I have to say, I kind of take deep down inside, I feel personally responsible for everything which has happened in the world today, because there was once competing baseball teams. I was at the bat, and I was warming up with my bat, and I happened to hit somebody while I was warming up, and I hit him in the head, and he fell down unconscious. And I still think to this day that was probably George W. Bush. I think there's some serious brain damage here. Now that, of course, is a joke. But we were a neighborhood. We grew up in the same neighborhood. I know the whole thing, and my dad knew the whole thing. My dad sold the old company because he said to his children, I never want you to be involved in this business. It's the darkest business you could ever imagine. He didn't always tell us what was going on, but we knew certain things were going on. I think I was about 8 or 9 years old when Kennedy was shot. The Saturday before Kennedy was shot, my dad was all in arms, and he called the White House. He said, Kennedy, don't come to Dallas. They're planning an assassination. This is a child. I'm hearing this as a child. And, of course, they didn't listen. And, of course, the buzz was around at that time. My dad was just part of the buzz. He was aware of military intelligence. He was aware of secrets. He was aware of conspiracies. He understood what went on. Throughout my life, my dad was harassed. He slept with guns under his bed. People would come in and do weird things at our house. Our family was harassed. And he was always pushed down when he would start to speak out. And I'm going to share one of the traumas in my own life, and I'll talk about healing that trauma. And I'll talk about how we can heal the trauma of America and thereby heal the trauma of the world. And then peace will prevail on a new level. So when I married my wife, Bonnie, we've been married now 19 years. I brought her home for part of that process, and she was meeting my dad. My dad gave us a tour of Houston, wanted to spend time with Bonnie. And instead of touring all the beautiful parts of Houston where he grew up, he drove us to the other side of the tracks where all the poor people lived and showed my wife all the poor housing developments that he had helped and all the children who'd now grown up and led happy, successful lives because my dad had gone out and helped the poor. And I said to my dad while we were on that little trip, I said, Dad, now I'm grown up, I have some advice for you. He says, okay, what's that? With a smile on his face. I said, please don't pick up hitchhikers. It's not safe to pick up hitchhikers. And my dad said to me, John, some men, when they retire, they go on safari. Other men pick up. He says, some men go on safari. I pick up hitchhikers. I like helping people. And he did. He would pick up people and give them money and drive them places and have all these interesting stories. Anyway, within a week, I was off on a honeymoon with my wife. We were in Canada on our honeymoon. And we got the news that my dad had died. I said, how did he die? He said he was found dead in the trunk of his car. I was so horrified. I was so angry. I was so hurt. I was so, who would do this? How could this happen? So we cut the honeymoon short, and we came to this town, and we got on a plane, went back to where we live. No, actually, we came back to where we live, and then we went back to my house for the funeral in Texas. And the car where he had been found dead in the trunk of his car, I went, had to go to the car and see what happened. And what had happened was, nobody knows for sure what had happened, but he wasn't beaten up. He was just robbed, probably by some hitchhiker is the story. We don't really know what happened that day. And three people had seen this car, and they, on the side of the road, and it called into the police. There's a car here, check it out. There's a car here, check it out. There's a car here, check it out. Finally, my mother called and said, my dad's 6 hours late from being at his destination. Have you heard anything about his car? They said, yeah, we had three calls. We couldn't find the car. Bad communication. And so they went, and they opened the trunk of the car. They pushed the button and opened up, and there was my dad lying there. So he died of heat asphyxiation in the Texas sun, sitting in the trunk of his car. Now, I went with my family, there's seven children and my mother, and we're there at the car, and I said, I have to get into the car. I just have to go know what he went through. And I got into the trunk of the car, and I had them close the lid, and I got to feel and see what my dad went through. And I saw there were these little, there was a light coming. He'd opened the back light to get air. So I could see in the light there were these places where he had used his screwdriver to hit the roof for help, no help came. And then at some point I was seeing how difficult it was to get out, trying every way to get out, and seeing how he pulled his little tool chest up to get out. And then just in the car, you know, I thought, oh, well, here's this air. I thought, put my hand outside, and I just put my hand through the hole, not thinking, you know, it's kind of an unconscious thing. And I was pulling my hand back in, and my brother, who was standing outside the trunk, said to me, see if you can reach around and push the button. So I reached around and pushed the button, and the lid came up. So he didn't have to die, but he was in the trunk. And when you're in the trunk and you're in terror, all you think about is getting out. You don't see the bigger picture. You don't see the easy solution. And what I feel today is that America, particularly America, is inside that trunk. And there's only a few people, and some of those people right in this room, who are standing outside the trunk. And somebody's got to say, reach around and push the button, you can get out. But when you're in that trunk and you're scared, you don't think outside the box. You're inside that box, and you're trying to get out. And I see this is so true of what's happened in America today, is we've been sold a story, and the story is that a few terrorists could take down America, and they could do it again, and they can do it again. Now, I remember just 5 years before going to a talk in Marin County where I live, Colin Powell gave the talk. And he was just talking about, you know, as a military general, we just, when the Berlin Wall fell, we didn't know what to do. We didn't have a purpose to exist. We didn't have a job. And he said at that time, we're still trying to figure out what our job is. And of course, if you understand anything about the economy of America, you realize that when the military doesn't have a job, there's a lot of people who don't make as much money as they want to make with our military economy. We need an enemy. The people who make money off of war need an enemy. And we're at a place now in the consciousness of mankind where we can rise above our differences. And I'm very optimistic about that. I'm not naive about that. I'm optimistic about that. Because I have literally faced hundreds personally of individuals on the verge of divorce who, with a little coaching and a little counseling, were able to find forgiveness, find resolution, overcome their problems, and save families. And I see it all the time. Thousands of marriages have been saved from the work that I do. Wherever I travel, there's a person that will come up and say, I've read your books. And we were divorced, and we got back together, and we're married now after reading those books. And I know what saves marriages. What saves marriages is to realize, oh, it's already over. Okay.
Finish your thought.
Yeah, well. I know what saves marriages. What saves marriages is when you don't focus on what they think is the problem. You've got to get out of the box and show them all these other things that are easy to do that solve the problem. And when you get people working together to solve those problems, then the big problems go away. And what our government is doing is focusing on the big problem that really doesn't even exist. It's an illusion. We've built to the lies and deception of 9/11 a story that says to Americans, we should be terrified and we're in great danger and our great trillion-dollar military could not save us from these terrorists. And the real truth is that our great military, if they hadn't allowed this to take place, somebody in the government allowed this to take place, it would have never happened. And if once Americans get the truth, then they're able to respond with the truth. And as I got in that trunk and I got through that process and I began to understand what caused this and I could feel that pain, I could feel the, I shared my pain with others, I was able to heal my heart. So now after 2 or 3 years, it was every time I think about that horrible thing, I felt pain in my heart. That pain left. And now I feel greater love and I'm a greater person and I'm more motivated to share with the world and do good. As the truth comes out that we're bringing out through this conference, through all these brave researchers and people are willing to stand up and talk about this, as this truth comes out, the families of 9/11 will start to heal and they will start to find forgiveness, not of the terrorists, but forgiveness of the country that let them down. And as they find forgiveness, we'll all find forgiveness and be able, and forgiveness doesn't mean to keep them elected, by the way. It means to solve the problem, and today we're solving that problem. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. John Gray speaking last May in Toronto at the International Citizens Inquiry into the Unanswered Questions of 9/11. To learn more or to get involved, visit on the web 911truth.org, 911truth.org. If you were unable to record this program and want to distribute this information, please email me, lynn@ithacaradio.org. That's lyn@ithacaradio.org. Or call me at area code 607-535-0147. 535-0147. Thanks so much to Scooter, the Christmas Coup Comedy Players, Skidmark Bob, and Jim Page for the music used in this week's program. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thanks for listening.